Welcome, everybody, to the All About Symbian Insight podcast, number 168, recording this on Friday, the 27th of May, 2011. I'm Steve Litchfield, your host, and with me in Sussex I have...
Rafe Blanford.
And up in Hull...
David Gilson.
And not in Edinburgh, because he's off somewhere in New York, Ewan Spence's at Blogworld. And we'll be back for next week's podcast, don't worry. In the meantime, there's plenty to talk about. Before we get going, Rafe, I wanted to mention for people listening to this, I guess it'll be released by now. There's a big update to the OviStore client, version 2.8, currently being rolled out across the world, annoyingly not to the UK yet. So India and France and the USA have got theirs already as we record this, but not us in the UK. Basically adding updates for applications that have already been installed, and also automatically detects the same. So basically it brings it up to par with many of the other app stores like the Android and the iOS stores. Do you want to just run through the changelog very quickly, Rafe?
Yes, as you say, you've got the application updates. I mean, essentially that's just detecting them automatically. So it'll check if you've got an older version and then making you able to provision them. For those that aren't aware, before the only way around this was to uninstall an application and then reinstall it, which obviously was a process not many people went through. And of course, the only way around that was if developers provided their own in-app update mechanism, which not everyone did, and some of them notably did a great job of it. In terms of the other bits and pieces, there's some quite nice server-side changes. So they're actually tweaking to the way applications are ranked. So they'll actually be device and region-specific. So, for example, if a game or an application is particularly popular on the N8, it will get to the top of the N8 list, but it won't necessarily be top of, say, the E72 list or something else, and also country-specific stuff. So what's nice about that is you'll get local content is more likely to float to the top of the list. And so if you're using it, say, in the UK, you might see the London Tube app having a higher ranking than obviously you would do if you were looking at it in France. And so that kind of tweaking your ranking, I actually think, is a pretty important thing because it really helps with application discovery. There's also some other changes to the way recommendations happen. I think people will be familiar with the Amazon model, where it's going to be if you've downloaded X, you'll also be interested in downloading Y. So that'll be used for recommendations there. And I think the final big item in the change log is the introduction of Arabic localization across all of the Symbian devices. That's actually quite a big deal because there's some 200 million people who that would apply to. And obviously, again, it's kind of Nokia playing to its strength in terms of global distribution and tweaking for local markets so that people get it in their own language. So as you say, Steve, quite a significant update. And I, for one, am very pleased to see these application updates come in. I'm sure it will mean that developers are more likely to update their applications. People can get bug fixes more easily. And I suspect it will also boost the number of downloads to the OviStore as well. We've always talked in the past about they've now reached 5 million a day. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see a jump as a result of this because, you know, typically an application can have, you know, two or three updates in its lifetime, and some of them will have a lot more than that.
Now, moving on to something that's basically breaking news as we record this podcast in the last 24 hours or so. I'm being interviewed over in China for their local version of the Nokia Conversations blog. Nokia CEO Stephen Elop has basically said software updates to Symbian devices are expected until at least 2016. And this is a cliche that we've used several times in the last couple of months, basically saying reports of Symbian's death have been greatly exaggerated. And I remember when the February the 11th announcements were made, Rafe, at the Capital Markets Day, I added a phrase in the news story saying Nokia have added a smartphone platform to their portfolio, basically adding Windows Phone as the primary platform, but implying that Symbian was very much alive and kicking. Now, of course, the way Nokia phrased it on the day and the way it was widely reported, I was kind of pilloried a bit for that, and I believe you did actually edit that line out of the original news story. But it's looking more and more as it's not quite backpedaling, that's too strong a phrase, but more and more as the reassurances come out from Nokia that they plan to issue multiple Symbian power devices this year, maybe even Symbian power devices next year in 2012, and updates for all of the current devices carrying on for as long as another 4.5 years. Am I sounding about the right sort of line?
Well, I think that's one way you can look at it. But to be honest, I don't really think there's been any change in Nokia's line here. I just think people misunderstood how long a transition would take. You know, it's very clear Windows Phone will become Nokia's primary smartphone platform. But, you know, people think of it as flicking a switch, and it can't ever be like that. You know, these transitions take time. And so, you know, looking forward to later in the year, for example, yes, we are going to see more Nokia devices running Symbian, and we've been told that they'll be multi-core. So essentially, you can read into that they're going to be pretty higher devices, and there will be a Windows phone device maybe. Nokia haven't, you know, given a concrete commitment on that, but clearly it's either going to be the end of this year or the beginning of next year when we see though that first Nokia Windows phone device. And I think maybe what's happened is the communication of this wasn't very well handled, in that the media got the wrong message and then reported it as such. But I don't actually think Nokia's strategy or its message has really changed here, which is why in the original story, you know, I actually said, you know, 2016 might surprise some people, but actually for a lot of people, it's perfectly in line with expectations. So, you know, I'm not so tempted to put on this sort of it's, you know, coming back at bit argument, or, you know, it's showing some sign of reluctance. This is just clarifying absolutely for people what's going to happen. Because, I mean, let's face it, we know that, you know, mobile phones, particularly the smartphones, tend to take a couple of years in development. And that's sort of being generous with the timing. It depends when you start the clock, if you like. And so there are Symbian devices that would have started development, say, last summer, that aren't going to be ready, you know, until a year's time, and then probably a bit beyond that. So actually, in terms of what I expect to see from Symbian devices, there's going to be some really interesting ones towards the end of this year. And I actually then expect there to be some more mid-tier and particularly low-end devices in 2012 and 2013, actually. And I think it's actually possible that we'll maybe even see one in 2014. I think that will largely be led by market demand. You know, if operators and consumers continue to buy Symbian devices, Nokia will keep making them. And obviously it depends how good they are, whether Nokia is able to deliver software updates, the design, all those kind of things, and of course how well they're able to bring the Windows phone devices to the market. And so looking at this 2016 date, I mean, actually Stephen Elop was at pains to say that's at least 2016, so that's the bare minimum. And generally you'll think of phone support, that'll be 2 years after they sort of announce a device, or, you know, maybe start selling it. So, you know, they're still going to be selling devices in 2014, and actually I think probably in small numbers in 2015 and 2016. And, you know, that support cycle will generally be, you know, 2 years or so, maybe 3 years ahead of the last device announcement. So, as I say, devices being announced into 2012, certainly, maybe 2013, although probably realistically they're going to be more towards the mid-tier and the lower-end devices as Windows Phone. So it will replace the high-end devices first, and then we'll do mid-tier, and then we'll do low-tier. But that's not a process that happens overnight. But it does mean, in one sense, we're coming into a golden period for people who, you know, are reluctant to choose between the two platforms. They're actually going to have a choice next year between choosing from Nokia's top-end Symbian device and a Windows Phone device, or a portfolio of devices. And so you'll actually have more choice in the next year than you would have done for quite some time, and indeed probably will have in the future.
I'm glad Nokia have said this, because I think it does reflect, I mean, how long people use their phones for. I mean, not everyone is going to upgrade it every time their contract expires. Some will hang on to their phones for a good long time. So I think this does reflect that. Although, I think what you were saying, Riff, about this actually not being any different from what Nokia said in the first place. Well, I'm thinking back, because I watched a video stream of the event that you attended, and I'm remembering the chats of it. Unfortunately, I haven't had time to bring up the references to actually quote numbers here while we're recording. But in all of those chats where they were showing Symbian winding down, nowhere was 2016 mentioned. So it's not surprising to me that there's been so much reaction, oh, well, Symbian's changing their mind again, or they think it's going to take that long to sell the 150 million that they said they would sell. So I can understand why people are seeing this 2016 figure as somewhat of a surprise. I mean, I saw it and I was surprised as well.
Yeah, so on the, just before you go on, Rafe, on the original story, which was entitled Reports of Symbian's Death Have Been Greatly Exaggerated, this was actually posted by me on the February the 13th, late in the evening, just after the event you went to. We had some nice photos from Mr. Forgeau, there was a chart there that Nokia showed, showing, as David said, Symbian winding down, Windows Phone winding up, and it showed us a kind of an area on the chart to show where their net sales would come from, with mobile phones kind of at the bottom of the chart filling in the baseline. And on that chart, they didn't have any dates. Now, using the information that they gave, I put an estimated timescale along the bottom, saying for illustrative purposes only, not a forecast, and with the actual numbers. And I showed the last Symbian sales occurring in about just during 2014. And if you then add on the sort of obligatory standard 2 years worth of firmware updates, bug fixes and support onto that, you did easily get to 2016. So I reckon that initial chart and my initial estimates weren't that far off.
Yeah, no, I think that's an accurate reflection. I mean, this actual timing of this, of course, is quite difficult to judge. I mean, as I say, it will be dictated by market demand and what the market looks like. I mean, I would just remind people that if we go back, you know, 2 years, basically, Android was nowhere. And we're now talking about something that's, you know, anything up to 4 or even 5 years ahead. And so, you know, deciding what the market will be like then, very, very difficult to predict. I mean, even for Nokia, with its sort of prowess in this kind of area of doing market research and prediction, and it does have, you know, very skilled people. So, you know, looking forward ahead and making those kind of predictions isn't going to be difficult. But I think it's very noticeable the language is, you know, at least 2016. It's sort of saying that's kind of the minimum planned period. And I suspect this has to do with times with the commercial contracts with people like Accenture as well. But as I say, that's sort of a mobile feast, as is sort of device announcements and things like that. I think what we'll see, as I say, is this, you know, Symbian continuing in on the lower end in particular longer than people realize, simply because it's going to take a while for Windows Phone to get down there. But just looking to the immediate future, i.e. kind of the next 12 months, actually you are going to see high-end devices from Nokia running both on Symbian and Windows Phone. And so, you know, people sort of assumed, I think, reading some of the media coverage, that there wouldn't be anything more Symbian at all going forward, where, you know, nothing could be further from the truth. It's really just a question of how far out you draw the line. And obviously with this kind of announcement coming from Stephen Elop, you know, it's made it a lot clearer to a lot of people where it's going on. But anyone who was reading between the lines, as Steve skillfully did back on that chart, would have realized that 2016 date was probably, you know, the best realistic guess, you know, even in the immediate aftermath of February the 11th.
Yeah. And of course, the good news is that we've all still got something to write about for a few more years. And anyone who enjoys listening to us all banging on about Symbian on the podcast can do so for a good few more years yet.
Yes, to give the official statement on that, All About Symbian will continue as long as there are people using Symbian devices, and we will continue to cover Symbian in our usual depth and in our usual style. Now, we have had some comments on our Windows Phone coverage sitting on the site, and we've said before that we're actually going to expand to include coverage of Windows Phone. But that doesn't necessarily mean it will be on the All About Symbian site itself. It has got a temporary home there, and that's really because that's what our audience seem to be interested in. You know, realistically, most of them are Nokia device owners, and so they want to hear about what's coming next, and so that's what, you know, really drives our coverage. But I'm always open to listening to feedback, so if you've got some comments on that, please do get in touch by email or on Twitter.
Yeah, it should be noticed that the site is All About Symbian, and that can quite conceivably be construed as all about including things that are relevant to Symbian users, and certainly where Nokia are going next is definitely relevant to people who currently use Symbian devices.
That's absolutely right, and as I've said before, we're never going to feel restricted by the name itself. That would be, I think, a bit short-sighted. We're really restricted by what we think our audience will be interested in, and of course our personal interests also come into it. We have to be realistic there. We write about some of the things that we find interesting because we think our audience will find them interesting, and we're certainly not going to be solely restricted by the name. But if I point out that we do have an All About Migo sister site and there's All About Symbian, it probably doesn't take a genius to work out what we're thinking about doing. But more plans and more disclosure on that in due course once we've actually finalized them and have something to talk about and show off.
Yeah. In other news, Nokia have announced a brand new premium smartphone for Russian mafia bosses. And Mr. Elop, if he's listening. I'm being a bit hard, really. But the Nokia Oro, it should be Oreo, really, I guess. But the Nokia Oro, derived from the word for gold, it basically got 18-karat gold plating around the edges. It's a C7 under the hood. It's got high-quality Scottish leather on the back and a single sapphire for the home key. Otherwise, it's just basically a C7. I think it costs €800, Rafe. Would you buy one?
I have to admit, I wouldn't buy one of these. I'd be quite happy with a standard C7. But as you say, it's sort of, you know, a C7 with bling. And actually, the cost of it isn't so out of sight. I mean, this is not a Virtu phone, Nokia's kind of luxury phone line by any means, which is €2,000-3,000 plus. I think this is more in the line of phones that used to fall into the 88XX series from Nokia, sort of the Sirocco and some of the Carbon Art and other type of phones. It's sort of intended to be, I hesitate to say for people with more money than sense, but it's where they want to stand out as an individual. And I think the Nokia spokespeople were very good in saying who this phone might appeal to, and they were sort of talking to Nokia's general manager for Russia, who said, you know, premium products like the Nokia Oro have always been good sellers in Russia. We have a large number of users looking for products with build quality and superior materials that attest to their social and success standing. So I think that was a very nice way of putting it. I think Steve's slightly less subtle Russian mafia is maybe not entirely in line with the Nokia marketing message.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they've been quite clear about who they're aiming this at, and I'm sure as such there'll be a limited run for a limited audience. Although, I think when I saw, I had a reaction which was quite similar to a lot of what I saw fellow bloggers saying on Twitter. It's like saying, well, this is a time when people are really short of money, and this is kind of quite bad timing to put out something so ostentatious. And really, just to me, I would have, if I could sum it up in one word, I'd have to say vulgar, I'm afraid.
Well, it's another Symbian 3 device. And one of the things I did find quite interesting about it, that it's based on the C7, which is certainly one of my favourite of the Symbian 3 devices. And we've also got the C7 Astound. So it's doing quite well for the phone that I think sometimes gets, you know, lives in the shadow of the N8, you know, with its 12 megapixel camera. The C7 is actually a very fine device indeed. So I'm not surprised to see this being chosen as the basis for the premium phone. But yes, let's just say it has a limited market, but for those that want it, they need it.
And of course, that limited market is overseas, as Nokia have said. This is not aimed at the people in the UK or USA who might be offended by the lack of their money in their bank account and the price tag of this phone. This is the people who can afford it in the markets where they want it. So
yeah, you won't be finding this in phones for you or Best Buy.
And we've got some developer news. Can you introduce this, Rafe?
Yes, there's just a couple of bits of developer news that we thought would rattle through, and I'm going to get David to do the first one. And this is news of experimental Qt Symbian SDK for Linux. So David, now what's the story behind that?
Well, this is something I picked up on Twitter yesterday from Lucien Tomuta, who's with Forum Nokia. It's a test build, and it's quite limited in its scope. It will only build for Symbian 3, so there's no Symbian 1 or MIMO support. It'll run on any Linux distribution, although the instructions on Forum Nokia do tend to point towards Debian-based distributions, because they are using the apt-get installation system to point to the software libraries that you need to install. But they have a YouTube video, which I'm going to write up a new story on this and people can have a look. But it looks as if it's... There's a graphical user interface which looks just like the Windows version. So if anyone is developing for Symbian 3 and has a Linux computer, well, you want to get over to Forum Nokia and try this out, because you won't have to run Windows anymore.
Thank you, David. This is, of course, sort of an advance on some of the options that are already available with the Qt SDK, where you can use the remote compiler on non-Windows platforms to do some of the development work. But as I say, I'll link to that in the show notes so you can see what David's written up there. The other two things I wanted to mention briefly are that Qt have actually released version 4.8 as a technology preview. In terms of what's new there, it's actually mainly about performance and bug improvements. For Symbian, one of the notable things that's changed is file input-output performance is much improved, which has been one of the bottlenecks before. So developers who want to check out the next version should go and have a look on the Qt website. It's all written up in the Qt Labs blog. In realistic terms, it's actually going to be a while before it becomes available on the devices. I think people are quite happy with the 4.7.4 release, which is really the one that brings in a lot of the necessary features we've talked about in a previous podcast. And the final one I wanted to mention was Windows Phone developer tools. And I'm actually mentioning this because this is related to the Mangle update, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But the version of Windows Phone that will be used on the first Nokia devices is Mango. Microsoft haven't formally given it a name. It's referred to as Windows Phone 7.1, but we've been told that's not the final name. That's just a placeholder. But since this will be what's running on future Nokia devices, Nokia developers might want to go and check those out.
Yeah, yeah. One wonders what they'll switch to. Symbian have done girls' names. Android have done desserts.
Yes, it's
done Wildcats. What's left?
Well, I think Apple and Android have their code names, as you say, the cakes and the animal names. I mean, Microsoft are obviously using fruit names for the code name here. It's Mango, but I suspect they're, in terms of the version numbers, they're probably looking to align with kind of desktop Windows. And so some people have suggested it's a big enough release for it to be called Windows Phone 8. I suspect that will actually wait until Windows 8 on the desktop itself comes out. So my betting would be on something like Windows Phone 7.5. I'm not sure how much it actually matters in one sense, because people don't follow version numbers all that closely. But we'll just have to wait and see on that one.
Yeah, as long as it's got the multitasking, or the pseudo multitasking, and which is one of the main things I've been complaining about. Should we do that new story next, Rafe?
Yes, sir. Why not? Microsoft, let's get on to that.
You went to the event, didn't you, where they were... Who was it introducing it from Microsoft, and what were the highlights?
Well, from Microsoft, they held events all around the world, and I actually went to the London one, and it was one of the UK product managers who actually introduced it. But as I understand it, the presentations were very similar where they were helping them elsewhere. I know it was New York, Berlin, and many other places in Europe and across Asia as well, I think. And they were really talking through what are the major features in Windows Phone Mango, kind of the update. And we've posted about this on the site because obviously it's relevant to Nokia users, what we're going to see in the future. But I'm going to summarize this briefly, because people who want to know more can go and read it up on the website. But really, the updates came around three key areas, which was the communications, apps, and web. And in communications, it was things like a function or feature called Threads, which is effectively sort of the idea of SMS conversation view on steroids. You can include IM, so Facebook chat, as well as Messenger chat, in addition to text and multimedia messages. Then it was things like groups, which was basically something you kind of would have expected to be there before, but it's grouping contacts together so you can send messages. But as this is Windows Phone, it's also collecting all their sort of social status information together as well, alerting to new emails and integrated with the live tile process. There's also sort of deeper social networking integration, so Mango will be adding Twitter and LinkedIn to Facebook, which is already there. And I do think that Windows Phone has probably the best implementation of this kind of combination social address book, if you like. You know, Nokia actually did a great job of doing this on MIMO 5 on the N900, but kind of we haven't seen that develop any. And you know, Microsoft has actually done a good job, and obviously building in Twitter and LinkedIn, I think, just adds to that there.
There's Can I just point in, Ray, before you to
yeah,
interrupt?
Sure.
Nokia Social, which we've seen on Symbian 3 devices, basically does a lot of this. And would it be fair to say that if Nokia Social ran it two or three times the speed, i.e. a performance issue, that it would actually be up there with what Windows Phone is offering here and what Android and iOS are offering?
Yes, I mean, I think if it was instant, it would be comparable to the Android offering. I think the integration is probably deeper in Windows Phone. For those that haven't looked at Windows Phone, there's actually what you call pivoting between screens. And so you have your basic contact card, and then you can pivot across the screen with a single swipe, and it will then bring up all their latest status information. And it's then quick to, you know, do commenting and replying to that and that kind of thing. Whereas in, you know, Symbian and in Android, it tends to be more static information. It's inserted into a contact card rather than that kind of deeper level integration. So I would draw a difference there. But yes, I mean, if you could get the performance of something like Social up, and so that when you clicked on something, it was instantly dropping you in, that would make a big difference. I mean, that was one of the things that did stick out about Windows Phone, the Mango update for me, yeah, at least, was kind of the slickness and the smoothness and general speed.
Yeah, and I'll just put in there as well, because from having painfully linked contacts on Symbian 3 and then having done the same process on Windows 7, I have to begrudgingly say that the process of even manually linking contacts was a lot smoother and more enjoyable to do on Windows Phone than on Symbian 3, I'm afraid.
Yeah, so I mean, I do think People Hub, as this kind of functionality is known on Windows Phone, is one of its very strong points. And there were various other bits as well. There's conversation view and email, so you actually get threaded views in email, which I think is a big time, so particularly on a mobile device. And then there's things like text-to-voice messaging, something we, of course, already have on the Symbian devices, but it also has voice-to-text, so you can actually, you know, do a dictation reply to an incoming SMS message. Talking about the apps area, the big one we've already mentioned in passing there is multitasking. Strictly speaking, it's not multitasking in the same way that it's implemented on, say, Symbian or MIME or Migo devices. It actually has, it's done through background services that allow certain types of application tasks to run in the background, so things like audio or data, and there are a few others as well. And the rest of the apps are kind of put into a suspended mode. But I think the important point is it does give the full perception of multitasking, because the switching between the applications is instant and you go back to where you were before. Whereas on the current version of Windows Phone, what makes it, I think, unusable almost for any Symbian user, and certainly for all the people on this podcast, is the fact that, you know, you come out of application X, then you have to go all the way back in again. So for something like a web browser or a Twitter client, that's a complete nightmare.
And people who want to know more about this multitasking in Windows Phone Manga, which is genuinely interesting to people in from the geek world, as we tend to be in the from the Symbian user groups, there's a story or link of interest I just put up on allaboutsymbian.com, and the story just Nokia batteries through the years and Mango multitasking. And if you follow the second link on that, there's a very, very comprehensive article going into extreme detail about exactly how Windows Phone Mango multitasking works and doesn't work, and all the different ways it handles background tasks. So do go and read that if you're interested.
Yeah, my Nokia blog is the site that have written that up. Yeah, they've done a great job there. Then in terms of apps, there's also Live Tiles. This is kind of like the home screen widgets that you get on Windows Phone. These have been updated so that you can sort of link individual pages within an application to the kind of the front page and get more dynamic information on them. So to give you one example of this, they showed off a British Airways application whereby you could, you know, log in, you could choose your seat, and then you could get your boarding card, and then you could actually you could pin that boarding card to the front page or the home page of the phone, which is obviously for something like a boarding pass application makes a lot of sense. So when you arrive at the sort of bag drop or the security area, you've got it on the front page of your home screen, and actually you can actually scan the barcode even on the home screen, although tapping on it will then bring up the full boarding pass. So they've done some nice implementation there. I think this home screen is actually going to be one of the areas that is quite controversial, because not everyone likes the blocky look of tiles, but that's a discussion for another time. Just racing through some of the other features, App Connect, this is sort of bringing apps out of kind of the typical application listing and actually making ways to access them elsewhere. So for example, when you do a search for a film, it'll offer you a result, the IMDb application, and jump you straight into the film for that part of the IMDb application, similarly for Last.fm for musicians. And there's a lot more to come on that. They just showed a few demos of that. On the internet side of things, it's about Internet Explorer 9. They're saying it's the full version of IE9 with HTML5 support and hardware acceleration. And of course, they showed off a demo which showed it as the fastest browser on the block. But without that kind of marketing spiel, if you like, this is a big upgrade to the browser in Windows Phone, and I think it's going to make it very competitive. Then they did things like Local Scout. That's kind of like the services we already have in Ovi Maps that, based on your location, will give you local restaurants, shopping, places of interest, and that kind of thing. It's sort of integrated into the Bing application. There are very significant different ways Windows Phone does things, and we're going to have to do articles on this in the future. Then there was Bing Vision, which is kind of take a picture with the browser and it will recognize books, CD covers, albums, and link you to shops where you can buy them, doing barcode recognition, all that kind of thing. And then those are sort of the main focus on the updates. There are a lot of other things, you know, turn-by-turn navigation in Maps, although Maps is definitely still inferior to Ovi Maps. And speaking to some of the Microsoft reps there, the indication was that Ovi Maps will come in due course and replace sort of Bing Maps. Quite how the branding will work, we don't know yet. But that won't happen with the Mango update. It's likely to happen in early 2012. And it may be that Nokia devices kind of have a early start on that. We'll have to wait and see. There are improvements elsewhere. For example, in Office, you're going to be able to do PDF files. You're also going to be able to do task syncing in Exchange, something that, very strangely, given it's Microsoft themselves, you know, Microsoft's mobile platform has been missing for a long time. There's multiple calendars, you know, there's extra policy support for Exchange service, so they're clearly pushing their own services there. There's new hardware support coming in, so things like 4G and NFC are going to be supported. There's more language being supported up from, I think, 5 to about 20 or so now, including, I'm glad to say, for Nokia's point of view, Finnish. And there's some new hardware partners got announced, ZTE, Fujitsu and Acer. So all in all, it's actually a pretty big update. And I think what I would say about this in general, you know, you can go away and read the updates. What impressed me is how seamlessly they kind of integrated into the existing UX structure of Windows Phone. And what I mean by that is sometimes when you see these feature updates coming to platforms, and we've seen it with iOS and Android, they do feel like they've been hammered on a little bit. And I think we saw that particularly with the upgrade from S63rd edition to S65th edition with Symbian. Did get a lot of that was improved in Symbian 3. But sometimes those kind of big functional updates can feel a bit artificial. But I think what was shown off with Mango is actually the flexibility and the expandability of the kind of the Metro UX, if you like. I would immediately say there are still missing features in Windows Phone, and there are going to be a lot of Symbian users who aren't very happy. It's things like drag and drop for multimedia files going across to the phone, or file manager, or Bluetooth functionality, USB on the go, all those kind of things. Now, some of those may well come in because Microsoft have not revealed all 500 of the changes. But I think even at this point, you can obviously see that Windows Phone and Symbian take a very different approach on the way they do things. Now, you can look at that a couple of ways. Some people would say that it's just fundamental difference between the two organizations. But a lot of it, I think, is to do with the way that people's expectations and perceptions of what a smartphone can do have changed. And just as Android and iOS were different to Symbian, I think Windows Phone is kind of the next thing on from that. Now, how much that's evolutionary, which is better than the other, will depend very much on what sort of things you expect your phone to do and how you expect it to operate. But there's certainly a lot to like in the Mango update to Windows Phone. And obviously, we'll be seeing a lot more of it in due course when Nokia release their first Windows Phone device.
Yeah, yeah. So thanks for all your comments on the site, by the way. Any complaints about the amount of Windows Phone coverage should be sent to rafe@bitbucket.com, where they'll be dutifully ignored. I was struck by your comments, Rafe, just now about saying that this is ushering in a golden age for smartphone users, especially certainly from the Nokia world, and that you will have the two platforms to choose from. And just you emphasize there just the tremendous differences in philosophy and outworking between Windows Phone and Symbian, and the way they've gone in terms of how they've implemented features and the balance between hardware and software and user experience versus functionality. They're just different at every level. And to be able to have the choice, perhaps, so for example, in February, March 2012, to have a top-end sort of N8-like with the latest Symbian, or an N8 sort of bit of hardware with the latest Windows Phone, that's going to be a pretty tempting choice and be quite hard to decide, I think.
Yes, I actually think one of the things that's going to be really interesting is, you know, these new Symbian devices will come out and they'll be Windows Phone devices, and people are going to be going, well, which one do I want? And I mean, I actually think that's a good thing. And a sort of part of wider of that, you know, that very different philosophies is a reflection in the way that smartphones have changed and what people expect for them. But, you know, that change isn't instant. You know, people don't go from wanting one thing to the other immediately. And it may be that, you know, Nokia have actually got the timing quite cleverly done here, in that, you know, we are changing towards a way where people expect, you know, the smartphone to be web and app-centric or service-centric. And I think Symbian, you know, obviously it's tried to address a lot of those things with the updates, but it is still very much a phone-centric experience, and sort of to an extent communication centric as well. And I think those themes obviously don't disappear at all, but it's a different emphasis on them. And obviously, I think if people look at the Android experience or the iOS experience, they will see that they're different to the basic way that Symbian approaches things. And I think the truth is that the majority of people as a proportion are slowly moving towards this idea that the smartphone becomes something that's a web and app and service-centric experience. You know, it is kind of the idea of the mini computer, but it's, you know, mini computer doesn't really do it justice, because it's this whole different way of doing things, you know, a whole different usage scenario or experience that is being born as these mobile, you know, smartphones develop. And so I think in time, more and more people are going to want what's being kind of offered by Android, iOS, Windows Phone, and the Symbian users will decline. But that doesn't mean for the next few years there's actually going to be this period where you can choose between the two, because some people will want one and some will want the others. And I actually think, you know, in terms of what Nokia will do, they will keep producing Symbian devices if there's market demand for them. If people prefer that way and they continue to sell well, you know, Nokia is not a company that is stupid. You know, it's about making profit. So I actually think the timing on this switchover, as I mentioned earlier, is very much driven by kind of consumer and market demand, and that's what will dictate, you know, exact timings on these kind of switchover issues.
Yeah, I have to say, and David, I'm sure, will agree that having tried the HT7, which I lent him about 3 weeks ago, Windows Phone 7 is pretty swipe-tastic. Never mind the there's other shortcomings. It is swiping every which way, and it's very, very responsive. But I do worry that in the years to come, with all these modern smartphone OSs, we're going to have people going to the doctors, and they'll be diagnosed with smartphone finger and RSI. And it's just, I have my objections to swipe, this way of doing gestures on the screen on a virtual keyboard to produce predictive text. And it works incredibly well, but it's also incredibly tiring. And again, I just worry about people's health.
It is. It's a big departure from the kind of the traditional soft key driven smartphone, which is basically what Symbian is all about. Even in its touch version, you know, we're dominated by that area at the bottom of the screen where you have the menu and then buttons on it. And swiping has been introduced, but I mean, in one sense, it's a good example of the way, you know, smartphone platforms develop. It's not quite an afterthought, but it's clearly not in the same evolutionary branch as the kind of the Symbian philosophy as a whole. Whereas you look at Windows Phone and it's quite clear that swipes everywhere, and actually you don't get this kind of the menu stuff which people are familiar with from Symbian. And I mean, that's a subjective thing. Some people love it, some people hate it. And so I don't think it's, you know, reasonable to say one's necessarily better than the other. But yeah, I do wonder with Steve there, you know, the one thing that worries me in all of this is actually that kind of swiping is very much look down at the phone and do something. It's not so much sort of glanceability. Maybe that's a little unfair. We actually need to go away and sort of be using these devices for a couple of months before coming to any conclusions. And I will say this about Windows Phone. It is something that you need to use and try out for yourself. It's not really something that's very easy to necessarily explain, particularly if you're used to the Symbian way of doing things. It is a very different approach. So, you know, when we talk about these kind of comparisons, it's actually quite a hard thing to do.
Yeah, you were saying that one is not necessarily better than the other in terms of these approaches. And of course, we should remember that Android, which is the runaway success story of 2010, 2011, Android is based kind of like Symbian, and that most applications have their own pop-up menu, which you pop up, and then you navigate options within menus and dialogues and scrollable lists, which is very, very Symbian-like. And yet, Android is a roaring success. So it's not just a matter of having a swipe UI that makes it successful.
That's right. And actually, I said in one of the comments, I actually feel in some ways that Symbian is kind of the old dog on the block, if you like, and actually the original Windows Mobile was very like it. It's actually very similar if you've used it, particularly its smartphone versions. And then iOS came along and Android came along, and they're actually sort of somewhere in between. And Windows Phone does represent a kind of a completely different way of doing it. Well, it's not completely different, but substantially different. And so it's almost like you can see this kind of user experience of a smartphone evolving. And, you know, we've commented in the past, and I think others have too, that in some ways iOS and Android are looking a bit old-fashioned. You know, the UI, it gets questionable when you try and expand it too much. You know, and so actually I think it's almost this idea that, you know, a UX or a smartphone platform almost has built-in obsolescence. It will work for the time it's intended for and maybe do 10 years, but then sometime during that period it will start to look out of date. And by far and away the biggest challenge of any, you know, platform provider is, you know, making that work if you then transition to something else. And we saw how relatively badly, I think, Nokia managed that when moving from non-touch to touch, and then basically the abject failure that was Symbian 4, which was an attempt to sort of start again and just didn't end up working. And I do wonder whether we might see that, you know, in the Android and iOS world, just as we've kind of done with Windows Mobile to Windows Phone. And so the idea, you know, that these things are static is, I think, something people need to get away from, because there's always, at the moment, the mobile industry is moving so fast, the way we expect phones to, you know, change is evolving so fast that actually having these kind of static platforms is almost an anathema to the way that the mobile industry or the expectation of functionality works.
Well, I'm going to just butt in here, and because it's for people listening at home, it's very boring to have everyone agreeing, so I'm going to be contrary. In terms of the glanceability and head-up display, I think Windows Phone 7 Metro, the live tiles, has promise. It depends how well developers exploit and can exploit the live tile functionality. because they could provide a good glanceable display. As for how you interact with the operating system, I actually do like the swipeability aspect, and I prefer having applications even on Symbian that do it over having too many buttons, because the thing is, everyone was saying when touchscreens first came up, oh well, it's good because you can have your buttons any shape, any size, and any place on the screen. But in a sense, if you keep having more and more buttons just to tap with your finger, it's kind of a touchscreen pretending to be something that it isn't. So and I think we all have the Minority Report user interface in the back of our heads, so we all want to be swiping our hands around and like almost tangibly interacting with the data. And just to pick up on one last point before Steve tells me to shut up, the USB thing, I think we can get around not having Bluetooth because we can email files to each other. So then, yes, we're relying on Windows Phone 7's internet connection again. Reading files like documents and listening to music, we can almost overcome by having an internet connection, by having services like Dropbox or SkyDrive. I'll choose Dropbox, thank you. Although, but even then, streaming music, so even if you have Last.fm or Spotify, when they come to Windows Phone 7, that's fine, but it is going to really suck the battery down. I think the one critical difference is if you want to watch videos, videos is where it really matters. And I find it unacceptable not to be able to just drag files onto the phone as a mass storage device, because the thing is, we have Zune desktop and we're going to have to wait for it to transcode videos. I don't want that. I just want to drop videos on my device and have it play it no matter what the codec is, even if it's a third-party app. So I think that's where the difference is, and maybe there's a sly idea with Microsoft here about trying to impose some sort of DRM and reduce piracy by not having any old video format, but I shall yield the floor now.
Yeah, no, just to make it clear to people what Dave is talking about, it's the idea of transferring multimedia to your device over a USB mass storage connection, which Windows Phone doesn't allow, and obviously Symbian does. And I know a lot of people transfer their music and video that way. For Windows Phone, you actually have to transfer it through the Zune client, which is the equivalent of OmniSuite. So just to provide some clarity there. And I actually agree, this is something that, to my mind, is one of the big kind of things that people will dislike, because it's that flexibility of having, and it's not really necessarily access to the file manager on the phone, because I think I see that that's important for a lot of people, but if you've got decent access to whatever's on the phone, that's less of an issue for me at least. And there are actually ways around it if you're willing to sort of unlock the phone and do all that kind of thing. But yes, I agree with on this USB mass storage issue. The interesting thing is, I wonder if Microsoft could actually relatively easily introduce that kind of functionality, and it could well be something that Nokia would push for, because they know that's what their consumers like. And so it'll be interesting to see how that one develops. It is worth pointing out that you know, for a lot of people, they already transfer their music or their video through iTunes or through OmniSuite, and so it won't really be any different for them. It's for Zune. We're talking here about the users who do things, if you like, the old-fashioned way, by mounting their phone as a, you know, port, as a removable hard drive or a removable memory location. But as I say, of all the things that have come up, because we have had a very I think lively comment session on some of these Windows Phone posts we've done, particularly the Mango one, and also Ewan's sort of diary, that issue with USB removable storage and transferring multimedia across has come across as one of the big issues, and I'm really interested to see what Nokia and Microsoft can do there to address that particular concern.
Yeah, we're going to draw a line under it there, guys. We're out of time. We will be back next week at the regular time for the All About Symbian Insight. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at AAS, main site allaboutsymbian.com. Don't forget, I'm Steve Litchfield on Twitter. Rafe is Rafe Blanford on Twitter. David is David Gilson on Twitter. We don't like to confuse you, apart from saying that Ewan is just E-W-A-N. Thank you very much for listening. It's goodbye from Rafe.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye from David.
Goodbye, everyone.
Nice and short. There's no zany goodbyes. Where's Ewan when we need him? Okay, thanks for listening, guys. Catch you next time.